Welcome, everyone. My name is Scott Shepherd, founder and CEO of the City's First Advisors and podcast. I'm very excited here today to kick off our very first episode with Urtico, who is sponsoring this event, as well as kind of the run-up to the ITS European Congress in late May, or I'm sorry, late April in Istanbul, Turkey. So with that, the theme of today's webinar, and I will introduce our guests in a second, is Cities at the Crossroads, from European Legacy to Living Mobility Labs. So today, everything is really going to be rooted in talking about how we have progressed from individual deployments and pilots to long-range projects that are integrated in the urban fabric from a mobility perspective, predominantly here in Europe, but a few other examples too. And we have a really stellar panel of guests here today, thought leaders in the industry from public and private sector that are going to kind of represent their own opinions as well as their own perspectives related to how this transition is kind of taking place right now, relevant in 2026. So just kind of a brief round of intros here to get started. We'll just kick it off. And again, this is all about showcasing the upcoming ITS European Congress in Istanbul, Turkey. And that's going to be a central theme of our discussion today in terms of the European Living Legacy to Mobility Labs. So first, we have Dr. Tamara Djukic, I hope I pronounced that right, Head of Green and Urban Mobility with Urtico ITS. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you, Scott. Welcome.
Next, we also have Tina Wagner. I think I pronounced that right too. Director General for Transport with the City of Hamburg, Germany. Welcome, Tina.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And last but not least, we go way back, very, very great collaborations. We have, of course, Karen Van Klusen, Secretary General of Polis, I believe based in Brussels. How are you doing, Karen?
Doing well, thank you.
Very good. Oh, very good. So now we're just going to get started. But before we do that, I just wanted to emphasize the point that cities are at a turning point for mobility delivery. And basically, again, what we want to cover here in this webinar is how this kind of precipice, this inflection point, is really starting to manifest in real concrete examples. We're going to hear from Hamburg, we're going to hear from Polis, we'll obviously hear from Tamara as well, too. And then that will kind of unfold within kind of the, let's say, the middle part of our session today. And we have about an hour to cover lots of different content. So what I'd like to do is get started. And this is just going to be a bit of an exchange just between Tamara and myself, and then we'll layer in Tina and Karen just shortly afterwards. But Tamara, let's kind of start off by talking about the European slash EU perspective and the context for the ITS European Congress coming up in April and in Istanbul. So my question or topic to you, and then we're going to have a little bit of exchange here, is why this conversation now? Why are at this point in early 2026 pilots moving to deployment? What is kind of moving us to this point of maturity where we kind of had, from my perspective, and this is going to my you're going to see this throughout the webinar. We had kind of a peak mobility hype around 2017, 2018 with, pilot fatigue everywhere, North America, Europe, you name it. But now, since the pandemic, the landscape has changed and now we're seeing much different expectations and outcomes. So let's chat about this. What do you think, Tamara?
Thank you, Scott. And it's a pleasure actually to join this discussion with Cities First, but also with the city leaders, Tina and Karen, right? Because I think they are the one who are really on the delivering the change on the ground. But I will try to connect all of us here in a dialogue. So it's a very good question because if we look at the European mobility today, there is a turning point, right? That is happening at the moment. Because in the past, in the previous years, Europe has extremely invested a lot to work on testing and deploying some innovations, pilots, right? Research. And it was a lot more investment in this type of like new innovative ideas, new concepts, changing the people's behavior, right? Also adapting, did you accept this technology or not? So we have run a lot of testings around technologies, the services, the governance models we need for those. And many of them have shown they are successful across the different European cities. However, when we speak about the large scale, yeah, it is requires from cities actually to answer different question. And the question the cities are asking is no more, it's no longer like, does this work? It's more, how do we deploy this, or how should I invest in this at specific scale? How I do this one in sustainable way, and how this should be working with the real world constraints that I'm facing. Yeah. In Europe, we have so many different cultures across the cities. Yeah. So we cannot forget that one. And this has to be respected as well. So having those changes and the shifts from piloting and to the large scale and how this can work at the whole system, this is why this conversation matters now, right? Because cities are under the pressure to deliver, not just to experiment. And this is where I see the change. Maybe we should think of the new name. Are we shifting from living labs? Are we calling them labs anymore? Yeah. Are we still in the lab part or experiment part, or we are really in the delivery part? And also, this is where I see the EU policies also is changing in a way and emphasize more deployment and impact. Yeah. And this is what we are looking for. And at the end, cities are looking for the trusted partners. And we are looking also for this transferability in a sense, show me the proven pathways to scale, how I do this one. And this is where more stories about the transferability are very important. And this is where I see the Ertiko together with the ITS Europe Congress. We are really in the middle of that one, how we enable this transfer to happen.
Yeah, it's all about capacity building. And no city, at least in the United States, but I know here in Europe too, this is a very American-centric concept. But at least in America, no city wants to do it first. There's a combination of FOMO, fear of missing out, but also you don't want to be the first one out of the gate either. So how do you strike that balance in terms of best practices, capacity building, and creating that community of knowledge, playbooks, as well as patterns that can be replicated at scale? And then not only that, but how can they be done in a way that is commercially as well as politically and let's say sustainably viable, and then basically checking off all the boxes so that this is not busy work and projects that are terminal for the sake of projects, because we run the risk of that too. We could say that, we're going from a pilot to a paid project, with a certain budget, 100,000 euros, it goes above the typical threshold procurements for tendering. But guess what? If that does not deliver the desired outcomes of the SUMP plan, of the urban planning policies for urbanization development, then there runs the risk of that kind of let's say gap in implementation. So yeah, but again, in terms of this maturity and moving away from even labs or kind of pilot fatigue, as I call it, 6, 7, 8 years ago, pre-pandemic, to where we are now, this is a very positive step, but there's still a lot more to be done. Not to sound negative, but this is where the devil gets into the details. And my next point to you or question is, how does the legacy and continuity of the ITS European Congress, we're in our 17th edition right now, how does
Absolutely.
that kind of factor into Tamara, this transformation from, let's say, individual pilots and kind of test lab to more at scale, let's say, solutions that are integrated in city governance and even the private sector?
Absolutely. So I really see the congresses as a part of dissemination, and they are really an enabler also for the capacity building. It doesn't have to happen always in the room within the common stakeholders that we know in-house, right? So it's really like global exchange, peer-to-peer exchange between the cities and the other stakeholders who understand what are the lessons learned they have it from different pilots they worked on. So where I see the Congress that Ertiko is working on and how to bridge those gaps, first we have in one aspect that the Congress agenda is completely aligned with the EU priorities and the policy frameworks. Yeah, so we are having the EU objectives sets in terms of the sustainability, resilience, digitalization, seamless mobility, and of course the centric user-centric solutions. Yeah, they have to be like human-centric, citizen-centric, and to work for all. And when we have those objectives on one side, we have to be aware of also of the ecosystem that cities are facing. And those ecosystems that cities are facing are not only within their own city scope, but there is an also the impact of the region and the national level, and at the end, on top of the European level. So there are many boundaries, let's say, and conditions that come into the place. And here we can speak about the different standards, the data platforms that are included, supply chains, for example, or like in the shared challenges that cities can have it, and then to see what are the common challenges they are facing, or technology providers, and how easy these technologies are to transfer. So when we have on one side the objectives, and on the other hand, we have real needs of the city's ecosystems, this is where I see the European Congress is playing a role to bring that dialogue on stage and to connect the EU objectives with real implementation challenges on the ground. And this is where I think we are now considering like an over like 100 sessions at the Congress that will be really dedicated to directly address those aspects. This morning, just I had one discussion on how we face the challenge of integrating the data and the AI models, right, in the different situations that can support the traffic management, the different services in the cities. So having this in mind, this really connects to the legacy. If I look from the European Congress in 1999, we have started in Amsterdam, yeah, and then today we are having the 17th edition in Istanbul. And what I can see also the shift in the topics. We started from road telematics to discuss, right, in the 1999, and while then we shift to sustainability, resilience, and urban mobility systems, but more from the technological level. And today, the shift for large-scale deployment, this has to be working for everybody, right? And when we say it has to work for all, then we speak to the city. That's why I see today's topic for the Congress is more like and related to the cities or as an orchestrators, yeah, to be a complex mobility systems and also how to of the deployment as well. So yeah, and I see this one really like in the if you look today, I think at the ITS Congress, we have over the 40 cities that are registered and confirmed to participate at the event. We have also like over the 400 speakers that are announced, more than 3,000 participants expected. Yeah, so I see that this would be very good ground, yeah, for the dialogue to complement these objectives.
Yes, and it's just this, like you walked us through this natural evolution of the very first session in Amsterdam, where it was relevant, but it was a bit more granular and focused on a particular, kind of technology as well as use case. And it's really kind of broadened in scope and depth to be much more encompassing across the complexities of the urban environment, as well as more, let's say, human-focused, user-centric, all forms of mobility, et cetera. So I think that that matches this kind of evolution over the last, 17 or 17 sessions, and how this will be showcased, in the coming months in Istanbul. So that's very great to hear. So now our next question or our next topic, I think now we're going to pivot to city leadership. So for you, Tamara, we're going to just to pause for a moment. I'll get back to you in a few minutes. But now our focus is on city leadership and real world delivery. So with that, my question is to you, Tina. And Tina, I wanted to kind of deep dive into the subject of city leadership in the city of Hamburg and how you guys are moving from pilots to permanent solutions. And I think you'd mentioned you would like to maybe set the stage and context of what's happening in Hamburg and then kind of get a little bit deeper with the specific examples. So I'm very, very keen to hear your perspective.
Thanks a lot. Yes, I think cities are crucial because we do have high mobility needs in cities, but we also have challenges. We have the challenge of becoming carbon neutral. We have the challenge of, increasing our livability for the people of the cities. And we also have the challenge of delivering mobility services in an economic way. And I know overall in Europe, at least, the budgets are getting tighter and tighter. So there's many like challenges we have to address, and therefore we see digitalization and ITS really as important drivers for mobility transition. So a higher share of mobility being made by public transport, cycling, and walking. We, for example, in Hamburg aim at a share of 80%, which is some percent to go for us. But I know from different other large cities that they have similar aims, and this is very important, I think. So I think that's very important that we cities also take the leadership because we offer the services, the mobility service, we or our public companies like the transport operators, for example, and we maintain and extend the infrastructure, road, urban rail, and so on and so on. So it is very important that you really think about how digitalization can be deployed in a scale-up manner. Coming back to the, I would say, end of the last century, when we decided to try to host for the to host the ITS World Congress, we already had like our first strategy on intelligent transport solutions, and back then it was very much focused on pilots still. So you said you want to know, we want to just try the possible solutions. We want to have pilots, we want to evaluate them, and so on and so on. And of course, also we want to show it to the world when they come to the ITS Congress in 2021. So this was still the basically the phase of trying things out. Some things didn't really work well. Others we found out are really good solutions. And then after the ITS Congress, we started to think about, okay, which solutions are worth really scaling them up, and how can we finance it? How can we put it into our, let's say, modernization cycles, for example, for the traffic signals in the city, and so on and so on. And we came up with this update of the strategy, the digital mobility strategy of Hamburg. And we basically did this, what also you, Tamara, pointed out. We developed kind of different pathways. Let's say, for example, for data. How we have an urban data platform as a city. What do we want to bring into that urban data platform? Also, ITS services like GLOSA, green light prediction, for example, like traffic light signals, and how we want to do that. So, and we looked to the data issue, we looked to the CIPS issue, we looked at the traffic management issue. So we came up with the idea of a mobility operating system where we have like basically bring together different operating centers virtually, and we have a modular way of developing predictions for road blockages and crowded roads. We have a possibility for people from the operating centers to chat with each other via this common platform. And so this is really a good system deploying the ITS and communication techniques for better and integrated management, traffic management. And we also really took a focus on autonomous mobility, roadside, so smaller shuttles in the beginning, but now we start to transfer it more to the larger buses. And also within our existing train networks. We had, for example, if I can proceed, Scott, but I'm sure you will interrupt me if it's getting too long. So I just go on. We have this one project we worked on together with Siemens and the German Bahn. Our regional train system is run by the S-Bahn Hamburg, which is part of the German Bahn. And we had a project with them and Siemens where we really fitted out an old or an existing train track with ETCS technologies, and we fitted out some of the trains with ETCS technology and automatic train operation technology, and had a basically a pilot on driving the drive the trains with a grade of automation two. And this was successfully demonstrated also at the ITS Congress. And then we started to have a feasibility study. What do we need to do to scale this up to the whole network? And this feasibility study came up with, some really interesting conclusions. Is that okay? If we do this, of course, it costs us this money and this amount of money, and we can, we have to consider the infrastructure and the retrofitting of the infrastructure with the ETCS components. But we also have to consider all the trains and the retrofitting of the trains, and we will be able to increase the capacity of the existing network up to 30-40%. And that's a lot. Because if you think about, growing cities and the increasing mobility need, and if you think about how difficult it is to build new train lines, for example, new tracks, new infrastructure, it is a really good result to see that, by digitalizing an existing system, you can really increase capacity in a relevant amount. So, we had this findings from the feasibility study, and then we of course, got into negotiations with the S-Bahn Hamburg, and we, came up with an idea how we can actually phase this into a deployment plan, or also, first of all, into an infrastructure, sozusagen, retrofitting plan, and into implementation also of the retrofitting of the vehicles. We basically we got a political decision on this. We provided the money we need, and so on. And now we are in the middle of this process, aiming at a digitalized S-Bahn networking system at the end of this century. So yeah, I think that's quite a good example how you come, from pilot to a scale up.
Well, I think what's interesting is that's Hamburg apart is because you have that digital mobility strategy, that framework, which, not to compete with other cities, let's say, puts you at an advantage related to being able to kind of forwardly think specific projects, scenarios, and solutions that can fit within your network and your
Exactly.
urban environment, so that you're not playing catch up, you're not reactive. Or you're not working, and this is a challenge I have working with cities, is it's very project centric and a very ad hoc. The project is the silo, and that's it. So it's busy work, as we Americans say. We're just going to get the work done. We're going to deliver it within 12 to 18 months. But the outcome, is that fitting within the framework of your urban mobility strategy, your urban planning and design, your future urbanization? And what are your long-range strategies for 10, 20, 40 years? Is this fitting in this project within this framework
That's very important.
to deliver the desired outcomes? Because again, this is something I've spoken about with many others on Cities First in the past. Even one conversation that resonated with me last year was with the City of Chicago about their policy related to complete streets. So inclusive streets, or as like they say in the Netherlands, the woonerf, the living street, that accommodates all users, not just cars, but people, children, elderly. Why that was important and why that conversation resonated with me was because it was based upon the aspect that really, if we take this user-centric approach and work backwards, the data, the technology, the AI will naturally flow. It's not technology for technology's sake. It's outcomes and human-centric based, and then the different solutions naturally fit into the framework of the desired results of the community, and it has to be community-led as well too. And this is that tension again between top-down and bottom-up urbanism. So we're moving away from 20th-century auto-oriented urban design and planning and mobility, more so dominant in North America than Europe, but certainly present here as well, towards a more human-centric bottom-up view that's community-led with the stewardship and the leadership of a city such as Hamburg. So Just maybe get some thoughts on that, and then we'll kind of pivot over.
Well, I think the user-centric perspective is one really important perspective. If, for example, when we introduce self-driving cars, buses especially, we have to think about what functions usually the driver has sozusagen besides driving. And there's a
Right.
lot more
There's a
functions.
little more than that.
And how can we provide the user with these functions, or with, what are the alternatives? And therefore, it's very important. It's a feeling of security issue for the users, but it's also the informational issue. It's a question of booking. How do I get my tickets? Could I buy it in the bus before? I won't be able to buy a ticket from a self-driving bus. Maybe I can put in technical systems and so on. Yeah. But this is very important that we not only take the technological solution, the self-driving bus, but we see the user's perspective. And what is also very important is that we consider and work out solutions on a system-based view, because it's, as I said, we have the self-driving bus, but what about the employees of our public transport company? Yeah, I mean, it was difficult in the recent to employ new bus drivers, but it's at the moment it's easier again because the economic situation is a bit worse. But it's the question how the people we employ at a public transport company, how this will develop if in five years' time we buy, let's say, 50 autonomous buses. What happens to the bus drivers? What kind of competences do I need that I didn't need before as a public transport company? For example, within the control centers, the traffic operation centers, or at the depots, yeah, is it different to handle a self-driving bus in the depot than a driver-driven bus? And all these questions need to be addressed, and we need to work out solutions and implementation plans, and we have to talk about this implementation plans with the how we say it in English, with the employee, the people that that represent the interests of the employees.
Yeah, the union's labor
Yeah,
issues.
the union. Thank you.
I was just gonna add that thought. Yeah, because
So it's, I mean, the whole system we
talking about
have
here.
to address, and we have to basically find answers for this transition processes.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing this across the industries, across the landscape. My background is also in ITS and tolling, and just the it's relevant to Hamburg, but also this discussion of kind of the digitalization and the changing in the labor let's say landscape for kind of repurposing jobs and roles, and how these emerges to new like technologies. An interesting example that comes to mind is the shift to all electronic tolling, of course. This is obviously intercity, not intra-city within the city of Hamburg, but that shift towards more let's say cashless tolling and or smart cards and all these other types of technologies that completely change the labor structure, as well as jobs and roles that have been more traditional. Some of them have been around for almost a century, especially like toll collectors and all that. So that's an interesting example of, let's say, more of on a macro scale of what you're speaking about in Hamburg, and how these challenges can be resolved, but there's that tension, and it doesn't happen seamlessly. And this is part of this transition we're going through right now.
Yes. And another aspect is also the question of budget. So
Of course.
the new solutions, I would say they mustn't be much more expensive. Actually, they have to support and to drive a more cost-effective way of delivering mobility. And often this is not seen from the beginning. You know, we work on high technology solutions, which often are also very expensive, and we don't from the beginning can't see a business model behind. And so it's so important from the beginning to also see and tackle this question of what is the business model? What's the role of the public authorities? What is the role of the private companies? And so on and so on. Within many of these technologies, you really have this problem of the initial costs of bringing in a new technology, which is often more expensive than the old technology. And that is a big, big challenge at the moment in Europe, for especially for the autonomous mobility, which I think we don't really have a solution yet.
One final thought, and I'm going to pivot over to Karen here. So yeah, we're talking about B2G, business to government procurements, and that huge gap between pilots and concepts and innovation, and how do services get procured, tendered, sole source, justification, discretionary budgets, etc. It's very complex, and it takes a really keen skill for private innovators to partner with cities and to hit that right note, to hit that right framework, because otherwise there's a lot of missed opportunities. But it doesn't mean that it's not insurmountable, but it's a very complex challenge in terms of matching the business models to a business to government relationship between clients and vendors. So yeah, we'll have another conversation about that later. So sorry. Now, Karen, really want to deep dive with you now from your experience with Polis Network, on how this city leadership and real-world delivery resonates for longer-term European city collaboration and trust building.
Thank you, Scott. So, well, the way we work within Polis is, of course, that we offer a platform to our member cities and regions to talk to each other and to learn from each other. So this peer-to-peer exchange is really important in also looking at your friends from other countries, from other cities, and see what works and what doesn't work. In that sense, also failures are as informative as successes for that matter. As you were saying at the beginning, we have innovators, we have pioneers, but a large group doesn't want to be first, because embracing innovation or embarking on an innovative journey where no one has tried it before comes with a certain risk. So it is true that we have a much larger group of followers than we have of pioneers, but we have this specific innovation angle within the Polis network as well. So we do bring cities together that are willing to take that risk, and I definitely count Hamburg amongst that group of leading cities. But then we also invest a lot in looking at replication and transferability approaches. You were making a reference to that as well, and Tamara too. So how can we take a solution that has been successful in one context to a different context? What are the enablers for success? What are the potential barriers? And how can we replicate? This is really something that we are working on as well. Obviously, the chances for success indeed increase a lot if we make sure that we are not looking at technologies or innovations or ITS as an end in itself, but as an enabler and a tool to reach a certain vision and to have a long-term vision for that matter, which can be really supported through concepts such as sustainable urban mobility plans, where you develop a long-term vision that goes beyond political election cycles, that smartly integrates innovation through packages of measures and solutions that mutually reinforce each other and serve your policy goals. Tina was mentioning the negative externalities that we need to address in the field of transport. And then, of course, there are the ambitions that we have as cities and regions to serve our citizens and to make sure that we offer good and high quality mobility solutions that serve access and provide access to services, but also provide healthy and livable cities that citizens can enjoy. So that is also the ongoing challenge that our political leaders are facing. How do you reconcile what the city as a whole needs and society as a whole needs with what individual users want or think they need, which is not always aligned? And that's where also the tension and the potential backlash comes from. And as you were saying, that's also why community and stakeholder involvement is really important. Then, when it comes to the public-private sector cooperation, we represent the public sector, but we engage a lot in facilitating that conversation with the private sector. And that's why we also work together with Ertico, for example. So, what we are looking for as cities and regions is what we would call policy-responsive innovation. So, technologies, new solutions that help us reach our policy goals and our ambitions. We do believe that policy re responsive innovation requires a certain level of public sector oversight, which means that we believe in the governance of innovation in a way that we maximize the opportunities brought by that innovation, but also mitigate unavoidable negative externalities. Commercial interests and public sector interests are not automatically aligned, which is fine. We have different goals, but that requires active regulatory intervention for that matter, so that we can really optimize the potential benefits of these new technologies. At the same time, I think we have to recognize as public sector that we need to innovate our own governance frameworks as well. We need them to become more agile, able to factor in uncertainty and the unknown, so that we are not just reactive, but also increasingly proactive in the way we try to embrace innovation. So that really requires frameworks that allow innovation to thrive and don't stifle innovation, but also making that innovation at the same time policy responsive. And currently there is this trend in Europe to say that we are over-regulating or that we need to simplify. And I get where it's coming from, but I do think that the fact that we have a good regulatory tradition at the same time is also our strength if we compare our European region to other regions in the world, where they have the tendency right now to just deploy innovation without any rules. If we think about AI, for example, if we think about automation, if we do that, that could very well lead to a situation where technology is making problems worse rather than solving problems. And the mismatch that we sometimes see between solutions, between quotation marks that are coming to the market versus the problems that cities are trying to solve is why sometimes innovations do not scale. If it's a solution that is still looking for a problem, then it is not a solution. And that's why I believe it's instrumental that when new technologies are being created, that from day zero, basically, the industry talks to the cities and the regions and tries to understand what it is that they are looking for and work with those needs and challenges. Of course, a good level of disruption is never bad, and sometimes we need to be disrupted as well, but still you need some kind of alignment there as well. And today the narrative has changed, as you surely know, from climate to competitiveness. And the new buzzword is competitiveness, whereas in the previous legislative period on the European level, it was all about the Green Deal. Now it is about the industry deal. And what I think is really important not to overlook in this conversation is how important actually cities and regions are when it comes to the competitiveness of the industry. As Tina was mentioning, you are infrastructure managers. Cities and regions are also service providers, transport service providers. You're also major procurers. Scott, you were making a reference to procurement issues. And that means that we have a key role to play in that competition conversation. The industry, when they're looking at cities and regions, they're looking at important customers of their products and services. And this is sometimes overlooked. And I think making it very concrete, the case of automation, driverless vehicles, Hamburg is engaging in that conversation and in that piloting a lot. But still, when we have conversations with the car industry or the OEMs, sometimes we literally get the attitude like, we will develop our product. And then at the end, when we're done, we will come and we will deploy on your streets. That's not the way it works. You know, let's jointly define which use cases make sense, which use cases are a recipe for success, because we do it in partnership, and then work with that starting point and develop the right solutions. We see that cities and regions largely prioritize the public transport use case, for example, when it comes to automation. So let's not obsess solely over robotaxis, and also learn from those who may be first but maybe not necessarily the best. Learn from what is happening in the US, the mistakes being made as well when it comes to the massive rollouts and unregulated rollouts sometimes of robotaxis, and look carefully at what we can do better, even if it is slower. I'd rather be a bit slower, but do it right, than aggravate the problems that we already are facing today. And I think these are really key issues to take into account when we talk about public-private cooperation and the smart use of ITS and other innovations on the market.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. Really resonates with me personally and professionally. But yeah, this symbiosis, this alignment between the public and private sector is central to everything, and co-creating solutions from the start versus working in isolation, as you just mentioned, Karen, which really resonated with me, was about kind of that kind of traditional engineering model of you're working in a black box, you're working in a bubble, and then you
Exactly.
go and knock on the doors of cities to decide that you're going to hopefully maybe receive a permit or not. In the case of micromobility, if you remember what happened back in 2018, no city permits were issued, but devices were deployed on streets throughout Europe, especially like remember what happened in Luxembourg, right? Luxembourg City. Just a little taste of what we're talking about here. And this disconnect between disruptive innovation, which good, positive side of the general ledger, but the liability, that's the asset. The liability is the lack of integration in terms of opening up a channel of dialogue in terms of how these new disruptive technologies, solutions, hopefully not solutions looking for problems. That's a whole other issue that we'll talk about in a moment, because that's a real kind of tripwire here. But these types of interventions, let's just call it that, that are going to change the urban fabric for better or worse, hopefully better, and how we can move away from the, let's say, reactive approach, which unfortunately many cities were caught in, even more in North America than here in Europe. But we saw that here too, in terms of playing catch up and trying to react either regulatory, politically, or even socially to these new interventions, without having that, let's say, that voice, that kind of representation from the start, which there were some very positive examples. I'm going to go back to micromobility again because it's really kind of interesting on that. And there's a lot of positive examples, but a few of the early, let's say, deployments of micromobility, let's say in the Nordics, were co-developed with cities from the start. So, quoting the term of my own firm, Cities First, they took a very city-centric approach by partnering with cities, not just to, let's say, ask for permission, but to define how the different use cases and geographic contexts would be relevant. So, as you mentioned, Karen, which is really important, is around, let's talk about autonomy for a moment here. We talk about this disconnect between the American-centric robo-taxi model versus the kind of European-centric kind of integrated DRT public transport autonomous shuttle model, which is of course very prevalent in Germany, especially in Bavaria, right? What's going on in Munich? So, and this dichotomy, but why that's important is only because, and I'm a geographer, I'm an urban planner. Geography matters, context matters. You can't just copy and paste in every single city. And if it works on North America, it's certainly not going to work in Europe. So defining these specific deployments, the tech is the same, but the use case and the problems that are being solved in bespoke communities are wildly different. And that is why it might be very anathema to commercial scaling. Or for many, let's say, Silicon Valley funded startups that are in Palo Alto, Menlo Park, Stanford University, and their entire business model is based upon that hockey stick growth, year over year revenue, or at least inflated projections, as we know, is not rooted in real integration of deployments in urban environments where there's that interface, but also that tension in B2G. This it comes back to again, business to government. So how does that reconcile? You said it yourself, Karen. It does by doing kind of slow and steady and incremental. Not necessarily, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And that's why I think we have reached a level of maturity in the post-COVID landscape, whereas we had, like I said, that peak mobility hype around 2017, 2018. And now we're getting very serious. And what you mentioned makes perfect sense that now is the time to actually integrate all of these amazing innovations into contexts that are going to solve social, environmental, economic challenges. Checking off the boxes.
If I can pick up on that, coming back to your reference to micromobility as well, we've worked a lot over the past couple of years
Yeah, I know
in
you guys have.
facilitating
Yes,
the
you did a great job.
conversation
Kudos
between
to
the
your work.
operators
Yes.
and the cities in terms
That
of,
was well needed. You needed to do that.
there was a lot of trial and error, and there still is a lot of trial and
Yes.
error involved in terms of how to best regulate them, but also how to understand the implications of certain tender requirements. For example, we recently had a publication on that. What are the practical implications of certain tender requirements if you want to issue tenders for micromobility operators? Sometimes well-intended tender requirements turn out to be very difficult to comply with. On the other hand, sometimes the operators themselves do everything they can to escape the requirements that cities are imposing for very good reasons. So how we can move past that is something that we are trying to achieve through new regulatory frameworks. But also coming back to the point that Tina made in terms of budget challenges and costs, I think we really also have to step over our respective shadows as public and private sector and embrace new business models and new ways of public-private partnerships. And micromobility is an excellent example. If you see that those services where the venture capital largely has been burned, so they're looking for a business model, but if you see that those services can help you to reach your policy goals and you can enter into a new way of public-private cooperation where they help you tick your policy goals as a city and vice versa, you can, by maybe subsidizing certain trips, help them to have a viable business case. That's the way forward, I think, that it's a win-win for both sides and also a financially feasible engagement for both sides. It might be cheaper to enter into a partnership for a city with an operator like that than to fully create a public bike share scheme on their own. And then on the other hand, if cities support the deployment of these services on a regional scale, where transport poverty is even more of a challenge, but the low density might be a business case challenge, then we really come to a situation where it's a win-win for both sides. And I think we can do the same thing for automation. And as you say, the US context is very different. We have a very strong public transport backbone. We have a good planning tradition, which is not the same in the US. So let's smartly integrate automation and not just copy from the US what is being done there in a very, very different context.
Again, well said. And the public-private model is definitely superior to many others. And just really having that kind of stimulus, that activation from the public sector to get private venture capital funded entities to kind of lean in and really start, as we Americans say, have a skin in the game, have more investment in the cities versus just seeking the next Series A, Series B, C funding round. As you mentioned, Karen, they've all dried up. So now where do they go? So you got to think creative. And it's not just about unit economics or just path to profitability, EBITDA, all these financial accounting terms, but also about how you're going to integrate with the challenges of a city, maybe not, let's say, a fully publicly funded scheme, as you mentioned. But something that shares the risk, but also shares the reward too, and delivers dividends to citizens in the process. So I
And
think.
if I can make one final point, because there's, of course, coming back to ITS and digital and everything, there's huge potential also in these services because they're inherently digital in nature to use that data to inform policy and enforce policy for those regulatory frameworks. And that's something where we still see a lot of untapped potential, I think, and where we also need to join forces to build capacity because there is a digital divide between the public and the private sector. Private sector, they have it in their DNA, and these skills are still lacking in many cities when it comes to making good use of that data that is out there, looking how it can be used to make their policies better, et cetera, and also understand what is happening on the network. So this capacity building, and I think you made a reference to it earlier as well, will also be instrumental in moving forward, helping cities to embrace the digital age. And it should become as obvious for cities as it is of today that they are in charge of physical infrastructure in the future to also be in charge of that digital layer, that digital infrastructure. But we're not there yet.
Yeah, no, not there yet. And there's some pain points involved, but that guidance and that capacity building, without kind of overly influence, not heavy lobbying, but a partnership with city, not let's say twisting the city's arm, but in a way that cities can start taking ownership and learning from each other as well as from the private sector, I think is the path forward. So now we're going to kind of pivot to our last section here. So Tamara, that's you and I now. So I want to just kind of look back and talk about the path ahead and the call to action. Let's talk about the ITS summit, or the ITS Congress, as well as the how, from your perspective, what is the importance of sustained engagement beyond a single summit? So, in terms of how can we build the momentum so that this is a lasting effect in terms of the urban environment, so that we are continuing this trajectory towards maturity in mobility deployments.
Definitely, one of the key messages I want to leave is that the real value, I think, of the ITS European Congress doesn't lie only in one single week, right? It's what we do, what happens before and what happens after. And we could hear also now and from Tina and Karen how long this process is, yeah? And it's a continuous process. And this is something we always use events to focus and to share a lot of information, but there is a life before and after this one. So what is important, one of those congresses, is that people really bring those lessons learned with them and they have clarity in a way of how we can deploy this one or to have aha moment, you know, like, and I know how I'm going to do this one after this event. So, and I see that the cities really need sustained engagement. So this is something that is really important. And now we also mentioned long-term partnerships. So it's not only to revamp the public-private sector collaborations, but also to give long-term visibility to that one and certainty a little bit, because I think we are lacking that certainty layer at the moment. And I see a lot more weight is put B2G, and I would really like to emphasize more, maybe new models of B2B joint one, you know, like, and not only business going to one, but why we don't join multiple businesses to see how they can together help city. And maybe some businesses can help each other in a way how they when they're integrated and working together. So this is some it would be nice if we would probably need more terminologies, right, to capture the moments where we are facing today. And of course, there is this trusted space for exchange. I would really like and appreciate a lot what Karen and Tina said. It's really open dialogue. Yeah, it's very honest dialogue. And this is something that I would really like that cities and also the industry is there to listen. I think it's opportunity also for cities to say and to trust environment where you can say, this is where I'm vulnerable, this is where I need the help, yeah, and this is what where I'm looking for support. On the other hand, industry is there also to learn. I don't see only cities learning from each other. I think industry also has to learn, and this is where the I see components coming together. And the continuity of the platform is very important. So not only the summit and event itself. And that's why I think this smart mobility summit of cities and regions that we are organizing on the first day of the Congress, and I know Karen and Tina will be there as well. Scott, you're also welcome to be part of the group. And this is where I see in this format of this summit, how we organize it is that we will have more than 40 cities discussing about the adoption of services actually that are using autonomous fleets like public transport automation and commercial service. Yeah, we have today in Europe first commercial services of autonomous public transport services and DRT services. And then how we integrate also electrification in that part or how automation electrification can work together, multimodal hubs also, because we need to connect those services in much more efficient way. And of course, where these societal aspects are we really do we really see all of them, how we deal with them, you know, like, and are they all integrated, do we even put some priorities there, and then how we prioritize the societal aspects as well. So all these four topics will be the key to discuss and to share. And we always in the format when we discuss these aspects with cities, we invite also observers who can come and listen about the exchange of the cities. Yeah. So, and this is, I think, also one of the aspects we can learn and keep those door open for everybody. And this is, I can give a perspective when I'm really inspired by the previous dialogue because What I like, it's this pragmatism that we bring. We really speak about very practical challenges. And I see also the very good point from Karen that she mentioned on the services with the data and how much evidence-based policies we are looking for. Because when you're in the city, this is where policy meets reality, you know, like, there's no, we don't have much space to test, yeah, because we have people who feel the consequences of every policy that we bring. And this is where we have to be more careful in a way of how we implement things. And I don't see that long-term impacts of incentivization and the others are not anymore only solutions that we have to use it anymore. And of course, and maybe the final invitation also to reflect a little bit on the Istanbul, right? So I just want to mention that Istanbul is a good location and great location. And for the Congress, because it's one of the mission cities, yeah, that we have in Europe and where we are working, and they signed the city climate contracts. It is a mayor urban node as well. It has a multi two airports, even the city with a million scale of the city of scale complexity as well. There is a bridge, the big river, yeah, that we have there. Real world stress test as well, because I'm pretty much aware of the sustainable urban mobility plan, how much is ambition and how many ideas they want to implement from the micro mobility perspective to the integration with DRT services and the public transport system, also the traffic management and to improve efficiency, the travel times on the road network as well. So, and I also see the big geographical advantage as well, and they have a very good geographical position to build, to bridge the regions, you know, like between the European and also the rest of the world. And where I see that maybe some deployments that are coming from different cities from in Europe can also be exchanged, how this is done in Turkey, for example, and how this exchange can be strengthened in that sense. So I believe that many powerful lessons can be bring from this event for sure.
Exciting time. So it's April 27th through 29th. The first day you mentioned is the first
The
event.
Smart Mobility Summit
Yeah,
and Cities of
summit,
Future.
the summit, yes. And we have some information for guests here. So the registrations actually are now open. So I'm going to be sharing that information with everyone here via social media tomorrow or Friday after we publish this webinar, which will be available on demand on Spotify, Google, as well as other platforms. This recorded session or this live session that we've been in right now, the video version is still available in LinkedIn Live, so users can view that as well too. But kind of back to the Congress, like I said, the registration is available now, so I'll be including links on that as well as all relevant details. And then here's a note for public authorities can also benefit from a 30% discount on the Knowledge Pass, which gives access to the full Congress. So that's another area. And I know there's many different public authorities that have registered and have been listening to today's really relevant conversation. And then, of course, there's going to be many different follow-ups related to the specific technical sessions, the specific themes that are going to be basically shared in an upcoming article that I will be publishing related to this webinar, kind of some lessons and takeaways. So anyone who's been subscribing to, let's say, the City's First newsletter or Urtico or perhaps even Polis channels, you'll receive all this content by the end of this week or early next week. So look out for that. And then finally, before I thank all you speakers here, is that this is the first of several sessions between City's First and Urtico slash kind of ITS European Congress to kind of promote the event in the run-up to April and even beyond in May and further. So we're going to be looking for several different sessions, webinars to kind of build the momentum and let's say spread the word related to why this Congress is going to be the most successful ever. And I think that it's a really good time to raise awareness. So I will pause for a moment. I really sincerely, sincerely thank you, Tamara. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Karen. This was really great, very mind opening, great exchange, a conversation. Wish we had more time. We started late. I apologize to all our listeners here, but I decided to continue this a little longer so we had a good hour or so. Maybe we'll try for 90 minutes next time. We'll see. But again, thank you so much for the dialogue. Traditional Cities First style. It's not a monologue. We have a nice conversation and that's where our guests get the most value. So thank you all.
Thanks a
Thank
lot.
you.
We'll
Bye.
see you.
Thank
See
you.
you.
Bye. And
Right.
see you in
Thank you.
Istanbul. Yeah,
Yes,
bye.
I will be in Istanbul. Yes. Bye, everyone.
Bye bye,
Bye.
everyone.